On January 1st, 1863, in homes and churches throughout the country, free and enslaved Black Americans gathered. They heard something monumental was going to take place. After hundreds of years of bondage, they were going to be freed. We know this date as the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. But it would take two more years before that proclamation would become reality for those who lived in places under Confederate control, which means many of those enslaved in places like Texas did not receive word of their freedom until June 19th, 1865, also known as Juneteenth. So when did you learn about Juneteenth?
I learned about it more recently. I reconnected with Juneteenth earlier this year. But I first heard about it when I was really young, but I hadn't really looked into it or heard anything else about it since I was younger.
Honestly, it was always written on a calendar. So it's always been on a calendar, but I don't think I've fully learned about it.
That was Jean and Angie. I met them the other day in Los Angeles. And like many Americans, they never really learned about Juneteenth. There was no mention of it at schools or in textbooks. And as you heard Angie say, she only knows the date because it comes up on her calendar. Well, what does this mean for our collective understanding of slavery and how it ended? And why is that important? Clint Smith has spent the last few years thinking deeply about this question. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic and author of the new book, How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. And Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
As I mentioned, your new book focuses on how collective understanding of slavery is so distorted in this country. And part of that comes down to how it is taught in schools. A lot of information, a lot of important moments are ignored, including Juneteenth. What was your experience like?
Yeah, so I think generally with slavery, you know, I think I got the hits, so to speak, which is to say I learned vaguely about Harriet Tubman, about Frederick Douglass. I learned about the Underground Railroad. But even to the extent that I learned about those things, it was on a very sort of surface level and didn't explore or excavate some of the nuances of who those people were and what these systems and institutions were. And I think what happened is that it gave me a skewed sense of what slavery was. I think if you are only ever receiving the stories of a Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass, or if you're lucky, a Harriet Jacobs or a Lauda Equiano, you are receiving the stories of really exceptional individuals who found themselves in exceptional circumstances. And those stories, while deeply important, you know, the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass is one of the most important books I've ever read. The stories of Harriet Tubman are deeply important to understanding what resistance could look like to this institution, but it also can distort our sense of what slavery was because the experience of those people is not necessarily reflective of the experience of the vast majority of the millions of enslaved people. And so in the context of Juneteenth, you know, I can't remember, I think it was always in the air. It was kind of a fog that swirled around me, but I don't know that it was ever explained to me. And if it was, I don't remember it well, and it wasn't done in depth. It certainly was never talked about in school, but I think I remember it being a part of something that was discussed in church. But I knew these things on a very sort of surface level and didn't understand the idiosyncrasies and nuances and the history.
Right. And learning about Juneteenth is important for understanding the history of slavery because it shows how all enslaved people weren't just suddenly freed once President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Union soldiers had to travel throughout the South to actually try to enforce it. But, you know, one thing you just said that really struck me when you mentioned names like Harriet Tubman is what we were taught is that resistance itself is exceptional. Mm. Because hearing about these individual stories and you as a young boy thinking, well, how come there were just a few? By omitting those other stories, you're omitting this rich history of how resistance has always been a part of the Black experience.
The thing about enslavement is that this is a system that existed over the course of hundreds of years, over the course of generations, that impacted millions and millions and millions of people who were all individual people, who all had their own sensibilities, who all moved through the world in their own specific idiosyncratic ways, and for whom resistance could look all sorts of different ways. You know, resistance is not just running away. Resistance is not just in the case of Frederick Douglass, getting in a fight with your slave breaker. Resistance is not just a slave rebellion. And again, we should study those things, but resistance happens in all sorts of subtle, smaller, everyday ways. When people fall in love, when people go dancing after a long day of work on a Saturday night, when little kids go and skip rocks on the creek after a long day of working in the field. Those too are acts of resistance because they are resisting the idea that they are simply chattel. And so I think that reminding ourselves and using Juneteenth as an occasion to remind ourselves that resistance was not just the massive rebellions or the dramatic acts of running away, but it was the small things. And it was people carving out aspirations and carving out community in the face of circumstances that we just couldn't imagine today.
As you heard, I spoke with folks here in the LA area and asked them when they first learned about Juneteenth. I'm really struck by a conversation I had with a mom named Erica from Pasadena. Let's listen to a little.
I am ashamed to say that it was in 2020 when most of the conversations about Juneteenth came into my everyday conversations. And I want to move forward in my life, making sure that it's a day that we acknowledge and talk about. And I have a child now, and it's so important to me that American history is talked about in a truthful manner and brings up the reality of our nation's history.
Clint, you know, Erica and I went on to have a 15-minute conversation about this topic, and you might be able to tell from her voice that she was nervous. She wanted to talk about this, but she didn't even want to give her last name because she told me she holds a lot of white guilt and shame about not knowing. And I was thinking, Erica is not alone. This really was the sentiment of so many people I chatted with. I mean, now that people know about Juneteenth and they're learning about other major historical moments like the Tulsa Massacre, what are you hoping comes from that understanding? And also getting past the emotional weight of not knowing into a more active sense of empowerment we often feel when we understand history.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people like her, as you said. There is a sense of personal accountability in which I believe it is important for people to look around and consider, not only in the context of race or in the context of slavery, but in the context of gender, in the context of sexual orientation, in the context of immigration and the history of imperialism, in the context of all of the myriad of things that affect our world, our society, our lives today. People carry a level of personal responsibility in which one should look around and consider what they don't know and attempt to learn more about the forces that have shaped what our society looks like today. At the same time, I do think that we should recognize that there has been a generations-long, often state-sanctioned effort to prevent people from learning about so much of this stuff. And it's a shame. And part of the insidiousness of white supremacy, I think, is that it takes empirical statements and turns them into ideological ones, right? So I can say the Confederacy was a treasonous army that was predicated on maintaining and expanding the institution of slavery. For many people, that would be received as an ideological statement, when it in fact is just an empirical truth, when it in fact is just something that comes from primary source documents that we have, in which the Confederate states said quite explicitly why they were seceding from the Union. All you have to do is look at the declarations of Confederate secession in a place like Mississippi, saying in 1861 that the reason they are seceding from the Union and ultimately would start the Civil War is because our interests are thoroughly in line with the institution of slavery, the greatest material good in the world. All right, so they were not vague about this, but again, part of what's happened over generations is that it is attempted to take statements like that and to make them seem controversial when they are simply based in truth.
You know, there's that saying, once you see something, you can't unsee it. How are you going into Juneteenth thinking about your place in this country and where we're headed in this country?
I think we're in a moment where more people are beginning to recognize our proximity to this period of history. And so, you know, slavery existed for 250 years in this country, and it's only not existed for about 150. My grandfather's grandfather was someone who was born into slavery. And so when my son sits on my grandfather's lap, my four-year-old son, I think about my grandfather sitting on his grandfather's lap. And I'm reminded again that this history we tell ourselves was a long time ago, wasn't that long ago at all. And I think when we recognize our temporal proximity to the history of slavery, then I think it gives a holiday like Juneteenth, hopefully, a different level of resonance. And at least I know it does for me. what I think most about when I think about Juneteenth is how there were millions of people across generations who were fighting to end this institution, but never got to see the end of it. And they fought for the end of slavery and knew that they might never have the opportunity to see it for themselves, but they knew that somebody someday would. And I think that that's the frame that we should, that I at least take into so many of the problems that we see in our society. It's like, well, you know, we are working to end mass incarceration. We are working to end poverty. Or we are working to end all these horrific things, not necessarily because we think we will see the end of it ourselves, but because we know that someday someone will, as long as each of us continue to do this work generation after generation after generation.
That's Clint Smith, a staff writer at The Atlantic and author of the new book, How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.